Before we jump into today's topic, allow me to take just a moment to thank today's show sponsor, which is Organifi. You guys know how I feel about Organifi. It is my go-to. In fact, this is so refreshing. I have a glass of ice, fresh water mixed with Pure and Immunity. It's got just enough citrus. That's two of their products mixed together. I don't know if everybody likes the taste of that. I do. I love it. It's like an orange flavor. The Immunity kind of tastes like orange. And then the Pure has a lemony taste, and I mix two of them together, and that way I get everything I need for my immunity, my antiviral, my antifungal. It's just a great way to support your immune system every single day. And then I mix that with my Organifi Pure, which is, it's basically all the superfoods that your brain needs to help reach maximum mental performance. In other words, it's what I drink to help me think better, to help my memory, to increase neurogenesis, and get this, this is the other reason why I drink it. Their product is clinically proven to boost BDNF, brain-derived neurotrophic factor, by up to 142%. Anyways, they've got tons of great products. Whatever your nutritional needs might be lacking or your palate might be craving, Organifi is definitely the company to check out. All right, guys, the cool news, you get 20% off all of their products when you use code Shalene. Again, it's Organifi, and I'm going to spell it Organifi.com/Shalene. That's Organifi.com/Shalene, and you get 20% off. It is my honor today to be speaking with Gloria Joy Sherrod, who is a licensed professional counselor with a master's in counseling psychology. She is also someone who has ADHD and two children. Not only does she believe in the importance of understanding mental health and is an advocate for it, but she's also the author of Adulting with ADHD, which is such a freaking great title. Gloria, it is awesome to have someone on the show who like really truly understands all of this. Plus, you're a mom, a mother of two. So super excited to dig into our content today.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for having me.
So tell me, how is it you yourself discovered and at what age you had ADHD? And I'm assuming you have a formal diagnosis.
Yes. So I always felt like I had ADHD, but as we'll talk about later, mental health was just not really a thing in my family growing up. So I, you know, kind of chugged along and tried my best. And when I was in my master's program, it kind of all finally fell apart a little bit. I didn't have the structure that I had previously with jobs and with school and everything. Everything was kind of like up to me to decide. So at that point, I tried to get a diagnosis. I went to my primary care physician and she did not understand what I was talking about. She's like, "You're getting a master's degree. How is it that you have ADHD?" And so I didn't actually get my diagnosis till after my master's program when I had better insurance to go to a specialist. And that's when I got my formal diagnosis at 26.
Let's start there. I think this is not an uncommon occurrence. I've heard from so many people in my community who have gone to their, maybe their general practitioner or someone they've been treating with for a really long time. And they're like, "Huh, you're just whatever. You've just got brain fog," or "You don't seem hyper. You don't have ADHD," or they assume that they're trying to get medication for some reason. And I think it's not uncommon for people to either have their practitioner, their doctor, dismiss their symptoms, not believe that they're accurate. And so have you found this to be true in your own experience?
Absolutely. There are so many different misconceptions about ADHD in general, and they are in the medical community as well, not just, you know, people outside of the medical community. So yeah, it makes it difficult for people to get a diagnosis. And there's the misunderstanding that, you know, you can't get good grades and have ADHD. You know, it has to be the hyper little boy who's struggling in school and can't sit down. And that's the view we have of it. So yeah, a lot of that.
Any recommendations for someone who maybe has had that experience and is a little frustrated or discouraged?
Absolutely. Seek a second opinion. I would say a psychologist who does assessments is the best way to go, because at least then they can't just dismiss you. They actually have to do the test to tell you why specifically they think you do or do not have ADHD.
So, you know, doing a little bit of research and background on you, I know that you grew up in a family where faith was really important. In fact, if I'm not mistaken, your father is a pastor.
Mm-hmm.
And I know for many people in the, especially in the Christian community, I don't know if it's all religions, it's one I'm most familiar with. Sometimes there's this, I don't know, stigma almost attached when it comes to mental health and diagnoses, because for lack of a better description, like, you should give it to God. You should turn it over to God. Like, he's the one who can handle all of your problems. And so sometimes there's this, I don't know, reluctance, if you will, to consider mental health services or counseling services. So in that you were raised in that environment, did you also face any of that stigma?
Oh, yes, absolutely. As I said, I always knew that I had something going on, and my ADHD caused anxiety as well and depression as well. So I was always kind of dealing with those things. And yeah, it was pretty much, you know, give it to God or pray about it. And my parents have definitely evolved from that since then. But that was definitely a huge issue for me growing up. And now, you know, they have allowed me to come in and share kind of the importance of mental health at this point. And, you know, understanding that it's the same thing as going to the doctor to take care of your mental health. It's not separate from your spirituality or your life, but they're all important.
Is that how you approach the subject with your parents? Because I'm sure there's people listening right now who are like, I'd love to have some tips on how to talk to my parents about this, or my family members, or maybe it's themselves. Like, you know, I mean, I have friends who sometimes struggle with the thought of seeing a counselor who's outside of the church because, again, they feel like it's betraying their faith. So any suggestions on how to either, like, you know, quiet that voice in your own head or have that conversation with friends and family?
Absolutely. That is exactly how I approached it. I don't think that I'm the one that convinced them. I think that life convinced them a bit over time, but definitely kind of explaining the fact that the same way you go to the doctor and take care of yourself because your physical health is important, going to a therapist or a counselor, you're taking care of your mental health, and you can still also go to church and take care of your spirituality. So none of those things need to be in conflict at all.
What about the stigma associated with medication? I don't know if you take medication for your ADHD. I do. I take a low dosage of Adderall and then a variety of supplements that really help me to stay cognitively as sharp as possible. Of course, I do all the lifestyle things too, and I think that really makes a big difference. I don't think anyone should just rely on medication. There's so much we can do in terms of lifestyle. But with regard to medication, and again, not everyone's form of ADHD or degree of it requires medication, but I do know that there's stigma associated with that. And, you know, I hear parents all the time thinking that their child is asking to be diagnosed with ADHD because they want those stimulants or they want to be medicated because for other reasons, and using almost ADHD as an excuse.
Yes, I hear that a lot. It's funny because there's this big thing about students using ADHD medication to help them focus. And what they're finding is a lot of the students who end up doing that are actually students who needed it in the first place. So it's kind of interesting how that works.
Isn't that interesting?
It is. Yeah. So I would say that people think that it's unnatural, you know, or a crutch. I hear that a lot. And when you think about ADHD and the brain, what it's helping you do is something that neurotypical brains do naturally, which is absorb the dopamine in your brain to help you with that motivation and task initiation and those things that we struggle with ADHD. And so what it's really doing is making your brain do something it's supposed to do already that it's not doing.
Yeah. What about the notion that it's addictive and my child will, or my loved one will move from one of the more common medications prescribed for people with ADHD into whatever the next thing is, or that they're going to get, you know, super addicted to it and they won't know how to stop and they're going to have to keep titrating up their dosage?
Not at all. So the statistics actually show the opposite, that people who are unmedicated or untreated for ADHD are more likely to use substances because they are self-medicating, the fact that their brain is not absorbing the dopamine. So if someone is taking the medication or getting the help that they need in general, they are a lot less likely to use substances.
Wow, that is such good news. I hope that people heard that. And if there's somebody you need to send this episode to, do so, because I think that is really important. I know it's true for me. I know it's anecdotal. But for me, when I first got my diagnosis, we experimented with a couple of different prescription medications and dosages and timing of them, etc. And since that time, like, I just felt like everything became crystal clear. It was like, oh, wow. Things were so noisy and loud before my medication. So when I hear people describe themselves on ADHD medication saying that they feel like it zaps their motivation or their creativity or they feel hyper or they lose their appetite, I'm like, for me, I just feel like everything quiets down and I can focus. And that gave me the confidence to explore alternatives to improving my cognition, like better sleep and the habits and the supplements that I take. And over time, I've been able to take down my dosage, which I think a lot of people do. So it's good to hear that. For someone like yourself who discovered this while you're in college and have had to figure out, as you say, how to adult with ADHD, I think that's a really interesting term. You know, it's a term we hear people throw around a lot. For me, what that meant was someone else had always been, I was just always forced into structure and I needed that structure. Like I did well, I didn't do great in school, but at least I knew what to do and when because of the structure of school. And then as I've heard you describe, like once you're an adult and you're on your own, especially if you're an entrepreneur, you're like, holy cow, now I don't have these like pending deadlines. I mean, I do, but there's no one to help keep me accountable. So what do you specifically mean when you say, when you're addressing people who struggle as adults with ADHD, what does that mean?
Yeah, for sure. That external structure is huge. And that's why too, when I hear other professionals say like, how do people do well in school if they have ADHD? And some people just do really well with knowing where they have to be, what they have to do, having those deadlines. And some jobs are really great for that too. And it automatically creates that. So I worked in childcare right before I was a therapist. So that was a super structured job because the kids needed a schedule and we abided by the same schedule every single day. And that was, other than me being late every day, it worked out.
So, oh, that was so reassuring to hear.
Yes, it definitely, it was great for my life and my daughter's life at the time as well. We had that structure. As soon as that was over, the structure was removed and it was a lot different for me because I'm in my master's program. I schedule my own classes and then I'm doing therapy where I choose my schedule with my clients. And so I didn't know how to structure any of that. And I would, you know, have to do documentation as well. And when do I do my documentation and then see my clients and then procrastinating on that documentation and not doing it to the last minute and everything just kind of piling up. So just knowing how and when to do things and not having that structure to do it is difficult. And then coming home and having chores to do and not knowing how to set a structure for that. Procrastinating on doing your laundry and you know you have to wash your clothes and you don't do it until you have nothing left to wear, that kind of stuff.
And you know, I think this takes a toll on people's confidence. And you can be an adult. And I think that may be why, you'll have to correct me if I'm wrong, that so many people don't truly discover that they have ADHD until they're adults because the structure's gone. And now you start spiraling. You're like, you know, you start feeling bad about yourself and you think, like, what's wrong with me? Why can't I get my act together like these people? Why is it that I keep forgetting to do these things? Why do I have these huge plans? I did a lot today. I was busy all day, but I didn't do any of the things I was supposed to do. I kind of did what I wanted to do. So do you find that it is in adulthood that many people without that structure, that's when they discover, like, or they notice I'm flailing and it takes a toll on their confidence and ultimately results in sometimes anxiety and depression?
Absolutely. I've seen that a ton during the pandemic. ADHD coaching has been in high demand in the last few months, for sure, at least, because the removal of structure. People are now working from home. They don't have the structure of being at their job. So now they get to decide, you know, when do I throw a load of laundry in my day when I'm usually at work and I don't have that distraction as an option at all. And yeah, it definitely takes a toll on your self-esteem. And that's why, so not only does the biology of ADHD create the propensity for depression, but then there's the depression of the low self-esteem because you're not able to do what you know you should be doing and the anxiety of knowing that you can't always hold it together.
What does, speaking of ADHD coaching, which is something, I just love this. I love the idea, the thought that 20 years ago, I could have hired somebody to help me figure this out. I mean, I really, really, it's like a nightmare to think about all the weird, bizarre things I struggled to try to figure out. I mean, ultimately, I did, right? Like, I learned my own coping skills, but it took years and years and years of, like, failing and feeling like I was really a major disappointment to people. And that sucks, especially if you're a people pleaser. Like, you don't want to disappoint people. And it's just this horrible feeling like I'm disappointing everyone. And because of that, I spent so many years just, like, trying to fix that. I didn't know what it was I was fixing. I just knew I didn't want to disappoint people. So I kind of established my own, I guess, coping mechanisms. But as someone who's an ADHD coach, what are some of the things that you do when you're working with a client? Like, what does that look like?
For sure. It depends. I work with a lot of moms. And so with their lives, they're trying to figure out, how do I balance my job and stay focused at my job and distraction-free, but then go home and keep structure for my family and my children? And a lot of the time, there are children who also have ADHD. So much of the time, I'm helping them build a routine. And so not trying to stick to a strict structure, but a routine so you know what to expect every day and it becomes habitual. And I kind of oftentimes use the example of brushing your teeth. Brushing your teeth is not something that you typically forget to do because you've been doing it every day since you were a little kid. It becomes a habit. So building in those habits throughout the process of, you're going to do this thing every day and maybe pair it with this activity, and that's how we'll add this. And then giving them little tips and tricks depending on what they're struggling with, because for some people, it's more so the sustained attention. For other people, it's more the planning. So it really just depends, but helping them figure out how to plan, how to make a routine, and how to stay at it when they're trying to reach their goals.
So talk to me about the difference between strict structure and routine and how that applies to those of us who are easily distracted. Because I also want to mention that there are people listening right now who, they don't have a formal diagnosis. And maybe they're like, do I need one? I kind of already know. But there are also those people who, you know, maybe they don't necessarily qualify in terms of testing as someone who has ADHD, but they've got those tendencies. They're definitely easily distracted. They definitely have a dopamine deficiency. And so talk to us about the difference between strict structure and routine.
For sure. I would say a strict structure is being really precise about what you're doing every single day. And some people are really hard on themselves about that. And for me, it's like, do the same thing in the same order every day. So you know you're doing this, this, and this in the same sequence, Monday through Friday, around the same time, making sure you're going to sleep around the same time, waking up around the same time, and doing the same thing. And the more that you practice doing that, the more you just get up and that's what you do. And you're not having to write it. See, this is where people make the mistake. Before they get to me, they write like a schedule on a board or something. And they're like, I'm going to abide by this because I wrote it down. And that's not usually how it works, because it's not a routine at that point. Now it's something that you have to look at, remember to look at it, reference it, and do it that way versus just going with the flow of the same thing every day.
That's a great example of one of the tips that you work or offer to the people you work with. What's another example of something where you're going to teach them, here's how we're going to do things a little differently because it's, you're going to get a better outcome, a result?
Grocery shopping, that's usually a huge thing. People are like, I don't know what to buy. And, you know, I freeze up when I make a shopping list. And then when I have to go to cook the food, I don't know what I bought. So kind of helping people through that cycle.
I guess that's why I never, like, literally, I went to Trader Joe's the other day and I didn't even know, like, where to put my cart because I can't go to the grocery store. I can't go to Target for an item because I will leave with four giant carts full of things we do not need and forget the one thing I went for. So let's say I'm your client. How would you help me understand, how can I learn to run an errand and pick up one thing and leave the store? Like, when my husband does it, I'm like, are you superhuman? How did you just walk in there to get one thing and just leave? How did you do that?
Yes, the impulse shopping. Absolutely. That's difficult. I recommend shopping online, always doing the grocery shopping online, whether that be pre-ordering it and going to pick it up or ordering Instacart and having them bring it to your house. That I don't do anything but that. And then I can also see like how much I'm spending and I can take stuff off and put stuff on and stick to my budget. Because if I'm in the store, it's easy for me to say, oh, this will only be X amount of dollars. And then it's like way more than that. But if I'm online shopping, I know exactly how much I'm spending or not spending.
What about that person who, so I created a journal. I have obviously ADHD, and most of the day planners that I use were like so complex, I couldn't. So I created one that's super simple. I call it a push journal, and I talk about it all the time. Like this is probably the most important coping mechanism for me that I needed to create for myself to stay on task. Every single day, I have to write down what it is I need to get done that day. And I live with this. Like I've trained myself to treat it like my phone. Like, you know how you feel when you leave your house and you don't have your phone, you freak out, you like turn back around. I will do that if I don't have my push journal. And I really do think it's important. I'm not sure what your opinion is, but I think I used to do this on my phone. And now if I pick up my phone, like in the time that I start to pull it towards my eyes, I'll get a notification to Instagram. And now I'm no longer looking at my to-do list. Now I'm looking at your brother's best friend's sister's wedding photos, right? But the one thing I hear over and over again from my audience is I have ADHD. Shalene, I use a day planner or your push journal or whatever, but I forget it all the time. So how do you help people do something like that? Like remember their list or remember their journal or to remember their keys, whatever it is they need.
Yes, that's another thing that we work on a lot in coaching because yes, there's a lot of stigma with planners and journals. So I say it's not, you know, the advice is not get a journal or get a planner, right? The advice is figure out how to use it because that's where the barrier really is. So building that into your routine, check that every morning, check it every evening. Put it, and so that's another thing when I'm building a routine with someone and they want to use a journal, for example, and it's different for everyone. I think, you know, for some people, the phone works for them best, and for other people, a handwritten journal works for them best. And so usually I just go with whatever works for the individual, but learning how to use it and check it and actually build it into your day, not just have it and like, oh, you know, I'll check it whenever I'm going to check it.
Yeah, it's kind of like supplements, you know, supplements are only as good as the consistency of which you take them, right? The same is true of any, whether it's an app you're using for your productivity or a written day planner, it's only as good as your habit of using it. And so habit formation is, I think, key to coping with ADHD. What tips do you have for people who are like, yeah, I know, I've got to get in the habit. Let me give you a specific example. How would you coach me? It's a true story. Girl, I cannot get ice out of our freezer and remember ever to close the freezer door. It's like a standing joke. We melt all the ice in our, so we have like a little drawer at the bottom of our refrigerator. So it's like down low. So you can picture it, and just ice goes in there, nothing else. And so I open it, I put ice in my whatever drink for the day. I never, ever close it. I put the ice in my water bottle and I go, I walk away. And it drives my husband freaking bananas. How can I change that habit?
So closing the ice thing. So everything melts if you don't.
Yeah.
Oh my. Okay. So I would say this one might need to get switched up periodically because I know that if you put sticky notes on things, people often say, oh, it blends into the background after a while once I put the sticky note. But if you put one on a sticky note or whatever might cue you on the machine and maybe on your water bottle too, then you have two reminders like, okay, shut it. And then you have your water bottle and it says, don't forget to shut it.
Yeah, that's actually a really good idea. I think sticky notes are great for reminders like because those of us who have the ability to be easily distracted, I'll call it an ability, we notice when things aren't where they're supposed to be, right? Like, so I notice a sticky note, like it grabs my attention. And I think because the drawer is down low, I'm like coming up and now it's out of sight. I don't see it because that drawer is down low. So maybe I need to put the post-it note up high where it is going to catch my attention because I really cannot handle another flooded morning in the kitchen.
Yeah. And we usually with things like that, we do a lot of trial and error and sometimes we get super creative with it. And so we'll try that for a week. And then if it doesn't work, we'll try something else the next week. And usually something sticks when it comes to that. So the fun thing about coaching is that we can try things and then, you know, fail and then try something else. And usually something sticks. And so that's always a cool experience to just self-reflect more than you typically would. I feel like usually when people are by themselves, they'll try one thing and then get discouraged. And then they're like, okay, I don't want to do this anymore. Or, you know, nothing works. See, I tried that and now I'm going to forget forever. So kind of challenging that mindset as well, that something can work and something will work if you keep trying.
Today's episode is brought to you by the Amen Clinics. It's at the Amen Clinics where I discovered that I had ADHD by having a brain scan. Their brain-based approach goes beyond the traditional psychiatry where people just, you know, ask you questions and then write on a piece of paper what your diagnosis is and prescribe you some pills. That's not how they work. The professionals at the Amen Clinic will actually look at your brain with a brain spect and then put together a plan for treatment. And when you change your brain, you can literally change your life. So visit the Amen Clinics. They've got clinics all around the United States. You get 10% off by entering the code Shalene10. Now, you can do that by either calling the Amen Clinics or going to amenclinics.com/Shalene. I'm going to spell it A-M-E-N, amenclinics.com/Shalene, and you're going to get 10% off your evaluation. What is one of the things that you think people who have a neurotypical brain, we could explain to them? So, our loved one has a neurotypical brain, or our parents do. What does that person need to understand about the person who has ADHD? Because I know oftentimes there's a level of frustration. I always say, I'm a very frustrating person to be married to. I'm a very frustrating person, I'm sure, to work with or for. So I always try to like help people understand the way my brain works and that it's not personal. And I'm not trying to be passive aggressive. I'm not trying to do these things. But what do you think is some of the best advice or I guess insight that we could give someone who's got a neurotypical brain?
Absolutely. Pretty much everything you said is in my documentary. Really huge conversation to have. I would say that, yeah, it's not willful. We're not doing it on purpose. This is our biology. This is how we operate, but also focusing on the strengths. What are the things that you really do love about us being different? What are the benefits of that? There are so many benefits. And highlighting that as much as possible, and then realizing that everybody has strengths and weaknesses, neurotypical or, you know, neurodivergent, both have their strengths and weaknesses. So how can these, you know, how can this relationship complement the strengths and weaknesses of each person?
Have you ever had to coach a couple where both partners have ADHD?
Absolutely. Mostly before I was in this field doing the ADHD coaching specifically. But it was interesting because what I noticed when I was doing couples counseling before, there were people who didn't know they had it. And so that was always way more interesting because all these things are happening and the people are frustrated and they have no idea why they're frustrated or what specifically is happening. And I'm looking at them like, that's ADHD. At least one of you has ADHD. So kind of helping people work through. Again, even if both people have ADHD, there's still going to be strengths and weaknesses that are different on both sides. So how can you make that come together?
Yeah. Every time I get one of those messages, I don't even know how to respond because I thank God every day that my husband doesn't have my brain because I think I would burn the house down or I would starve to death, which is probably not true because I did survive before I met him. But I try to imagine like, this is interesting. Now I'm going on a tangent, but I have got a lot of girlfriends who have ADHD and I'm very comfortable around them. I'm much more comfortable around them than my friends who don't have ADHD. Why is that?
I'm with you on that. I'm with you on both of those points. My husband is so neurotypical. It's just, and he helps so much like with the stuff that I, you know, drop the ball on, but yes, my friends who I have that have ADHD, even if they didn't know before, same, they are the ones I click with the most. I just think that the way that the ADHD brain works and thinks is different. And so there's this level of connection with someone else who thinks the way you do without having to explain that and maybe experience some of the same things without having to explain that.
Yeah, I guess it's just that simple, right? Like scientists like to hang out with scientists. People who are book nerds like to hang out with book nerds. Like is attracted to like, and when somebody's brain works the same way your brain does, it's kind of exciting. My son-in-law, when I first met him, I shouldn't say son-in-law, future son-in-law, Roman, my daughter's fiance, we spent like, I don't know, had two dinners with him, and I'm like, you do know he has the same type of ADHD as your mom. And she's like, I don't think so. I'm like, trust me. And so like the longer they've been dating, I just find that like I relate to the way his brain bounces around subjects. I just relate to some of the like things that probably would drive somebody else crazy. I find so endearing in my girlfriends, like the fact that they change subjects, that they're always late, that they just all the things, that they lose things. Maybe part of it is like, oh, I'm normal.
Right.
But yeah. Again, what advice do you have for that couple where both partners have ADHD?
Yes, it's probably not going to be easy. I will say that. And there will have to be a lot of management of the ADHD on both sides individually. That's one of the huge things for me when working with couples in general. I feel like individual work is not talked about enough prior to couples, because marriage in general is two people coming together and bringing two completely different worlds together. And so if individual work has not been done when you're bringing two worlds together, that's going to be really difficult. So both people figuring out how to manage their symptoms and how they can support one another, I think is really important. Both people having therapy on their own, both people maybe having a coach, and whatever other steps they decide to take to manage their ADHD is going to be really important.
I love that. I agree with you 100%. I am a big fan of therapy. My own personal experience is I didn't love couples therapy. I think it was valuable, and I think some great things came out of it. But I also think it's probably best to start with individual therapy. Again, just my personal experience. We both grew so much independently that allowed us to be less codependent, if you will, and also kind of like work through our own things before coming together and doing couples therapy. So I agree with you there. And that makes total sense with, partners who both have ADHD. And also the flip side of it, the positive is, as we said, you know, we're more comfortable around someone who has the same kind of brain as us. So you're not going to assume that your partner is being passive aggressive because they forgot to bring home the one thing you said to pick up at the store because you have ADHD. So you really understand it. So I assume, you know, there's pros and cons to it, right? It's all not all negative. And one of you will remember to turn the fireplace off before you go to bed so you don't burn the house down.
Absolutely. Yes. Holding one another accountable too, because I think that, as you know, I talk to so many people with ADHD who are like, I can't seem to clean my own house, but when someone else asks me to clean their house or organize their house, I'm like so excited to do it because there's that dopamine rush of doing a problem solving task for someone
else. That is it.
Yeah. So I think that two ADHD partners can support one another and hold one another accountable because it's not the same.
That is so true. Like last night, I think I told you we started doing a remodel of our bathroom, which is above me right now. So I'm hoping it stays quiet. But that meant that we had to move out of our master bathroom. And I'm a pretty organized minimalist hoarder. And apparently, most of my hoarding takes place in the bathroom, apparently. I discovered this last night when my husband at 9 o'clock said, you know, the bathroom has to be completely emptied tonight. And I was like, So I went upstairs and I stood in my bathroom for about 30 minutes because I wasn't motivated to do it. It didn't sound like fun. Normally, organizing is like my treat. I love it. I love organizing my closet. I love organizing your house. I love organizing your things. But now that I'm in my master bathroom and I have to do it right now, right? I was not motivated to do it and I wanted to do anything other than that. So my brain was like, find something stimulating. I probably spent 30 minutes just looking on YouTube for anything that would stimulate me. And it was so strange, girl. Like everything I picked up, I'm like, oh, a lipstick. I put on like 40 lipsticks because I just kept and got nowhere. I finally just had to go to bed and start over this morning. So what's that?
What is it that it's easier for you to want to organize other people's things?
Yeah. And then also that I woke up this morning and I wanted to do it.
Yes, I would always recommend that. I always tell people that if you're not feeling it, don't sit. Like if you have a task at the computer, for example, don't sit at the computer for 2 hours and don't do anything. Get up and do something else. Because I, from experience, before I knew I had ADHD, I would sit in front of the computer for, I'm not kidding, probably 4 hours, like trying to make myself start something that I just was not in the mode to start. And now I know, like after it's been like 25 minutes, I'm like, okay, my brain's not feeling this. Let me go take a walk or do something else that's, you know, stimulating, like you're saying. And sometimes that means it's not going to get done today and I need to go to sleep and wake up and do it tomorrow. If it's not, you know, so urgent that it needs to get done right now, then my brain kicks into, you know, we need to do that now. So kind of figuring out how to work with your brain in that way.
You mentioned that you work with a lot of moms, and I assume that you work with moms who, first of all, I don't actually know this. Do either of your children have ADHD?
Yes, my daughter does.
Ah, okay. So this is great. You can speak from firsthand experience and then also the folks that you've been coaching. What suggestions, what things do parents need to know who have ADHD or have a child who has ADHD?
It is not easy. So my daughter got her official diagnosis before I got mine.
Wow.
And that's what, so like I was already having trouble, but that's what really made me be like, okay, for sure, I need to do something with mine so that I can support hers. Because my life was falling apart a little bit, but I didn't want my daughter's life to fall apart. So I really had to do something at that point. And I think a lot of parents feel like that. A lot of parents say, you know, I don't want to be teaching my child this, or they feel like they're teaching their child these, you know, ADHD traits because that's how they are. And I'm like, no, it's hereditary. It's one of the most hereditary psychiatric conditions there are. And so by you not being as organized as you would like, that's not why your child is like that. It's because it's hereditary. And so not feeling guilty about the fact that you start to see that in your child and finding the positives again of like, okay, you know, what are the positives in myself that I found because of ADHD? How can I find the positives in my child and point that out to them? My daughter, her main issue when we first found out was she was so chatty at school, talking to everybody around her all the time. And so that's when I started getting the phone calls of like, okay, we're talking when we're not supposed to. And so I told her, you know, it's a strength that you're a great talker and you're going to be able to make money one day off of talking. You know, you can do so many things with that talent, and kind of helping her develop that. So now we have to figure out, how do we listen more at school so that you can also learn what the teacher's teaching and being allowed to get up when she needed to get up and all that stuff. But starting with the positives, I think, is really important. And for parents who are feeling the guilt, remembering that what you are teaching them too is how you're dealing with your own ADHD and how you're feeling about yourself and how you're talking about yourself. And so, you know, I may not be the most organized mom and my kid knows that, but I have all these other things I'm great at. And that's okay. And that is the most valuable thing I feel like I could teach my child over trying to teach her how to be perfectly organized or perfectly clean or any of that stuff. We might be a little scattered sometimes, but we have our strengths as well.
Do you ever recommend that parents offer to their kids ways to cope with them? Like, so I'm fortunate. I shouldn't say I'm fortunate. That's a wrong thing to say. My children simply don't have ADHD, but their mother does. And their father's brain is like the most neurotypical focused individual you've ever met. And apparently he passed it along to them. But I always felt like a lot of mom guilt because I would forget to remind them that they needed to pack their extra jersey on that day, or that on Friday they needed to bring cupcakes, or I mean, I needed to bring cupcakes, you know, and I had so much guilt. Like, does this make me a bad mom? Because I felt like a bad mom because I was letting my kids down and I'm like, I'm the mom. This is my job to remember this, or it was my job to be organized enough to get this done. And eventually, I think, I don't know if it was a good thing or not, but I think eventually my kids realized like that's how my brain was, and they would do things to make certain those things happened. And I wonder now in retrospect, should I have like explained to them that I had these deficiencies or acknowledged it or talked about it? Because I didn't when they were little.
Yeah, I do very much a lot, probably especially because my daughter also has it. So kind of I feel like I'm modeling something again when I talk about it openly. And knowing that there's no shame in being different, I think that that teaches that as well. And I tell my daughter all the time, I know that I'm going to forget something. I'll say, can you remind me? And I'll remind you. And maybe neither of us will remember, but we'll remember this conversation. And it works that way. Yeah. And sometimes she'll be like, remember the conversation we had? Or I'll remember because I remember the conversation we had. So finding little tricks like that to help us remember and delegating to the family for sure. Because a lot of moms I work with are like, waking up and doing everything for the whole entire family and then like still then going to their jobs and then doing all the stuff, myself included at first, and not realizing that like, you know, other people in the family can help you and it's okay. And as a mom, you don't have to do every single thing. I think that applies to any mom, but like, you know, if when your kids are older, there's a lot of things that they can do in the morning to help out husbands when there are husbands present. There are a lot of things they can do to help out. And I think sometimes moms find it easier to just do it themselves instead of delegating. But delegating is so important.
Maybe they find it easier to do it themselves, or maybe it's guilt associated. My husband and I coach a lot of entrepreneurial couples and just entrepreneurs in general. And of course, I tend to attract people who are easily distracted. They might not have a diagnosis, but they're definitely easily distracted. And one of the things that I always recommend that they do, and this is a leap of faith, right? Because sometimes you're like, I can't afford to do that because I've just started my business. But I always recommend that if you can just afford to hire someone just a few hours a week to outsource those kinds of things, it will lift the guilt from you. It allows you to be a better parent. It allows you to be a better entrepreneur. Things that I did when my kids were young and I was building a business. And, you know, the one thing I didn't want to do is drop the ball for my kids. So I hired an assistant who was in charge of my emails and in charge of all of their calendar dates. I was still going to be the mom. I was still going to make the cupcakes, but it was her responsibility to say, it's tomorrow. You need to make them tonight. Okay, if you haven't already, you need to go to the store and buy a cake mix. Or if I did forget, I could send her an email and say, help. You know, what do I do? It's at 4 o'clock. And she would say, okay, don't worry, I'm going to problem solve this. But she was in charge of all the dates and the things that I knew were really, really important. Because that's, for me, those are things I struggle with, dates and times and managing anything that's not immediately in front of me. I just kind of like wake up and it's like, okay, where am I today and what am I doing? So that helped me to grow my business. You know, and initially when we did that, we really couldn't afford to, but we also couldn't afford not to, you know, because you don't get a chance to redo those things for your family and to free up that mental space to not have to worry about those kinds of little things, like even just buying birthday presents and wrapping them and making sure I've got cards available. Like those things are important because I don't want people to not feel seen and cared for, but I could never remember to do those things. So outsourcing it helped my confidence, helped me to show up the way I wanted to for my children and for other people.
Absolutely. I always recommend that where possible. And yeah, there is a lot of guilt associated with having someone else do things, having someone else clean the house or make food or do the laundry. But if you can afford that and it's there, I say do it as much as you can.
Gloria, have you ever had, no, I'm going to ask this a little differently. There's somebody listening right now whose loved one has ADHD and they would love to hire you, but they fear that if it's their idea, they will offend the person who has ADHD. How would you suggest that they enter into that conversation?
That's a tough one. I would say that that's difficult. So in the therapy world, we always would like for people to call us, the people who need help to call us. And if we don't talk to the person who needs the help, we usually don't press it because if someone doesn't have the 100% buy-in, they usually don't engage in the treatment in the way that they could. And so the changes won't be made in the way that would be most impactful for them. So if they see that they really need help, then you could offer it as a solution. But if they don't, then it's a little bit more tricky.
Yeah. So maybe bring up the conversation about possible potential solutions and just say, you know what, come to think of it, I heard this great podcast interview. I think the gal's name is Gloria. You should listen to it, or sending them this YouTube video, or, you know, just letting people reach that conclusion on their own to give it a try.
Yes. Yep. I think everyone comes to a point, even, you know, myself, and everyone has a story with their ADHD where there was a moment in their life where they realized, I cannot operate like this anymore. And it took me some time. It took my daughter, really. I mean, I was struggling before that, but it took my daughter and me knowing I needed to give her a certain level of structure. That's when I was like, I need to fix something here. And so I think everyone has that journey, and that's okay.
How old is your daughter?
8.
Oh, wow. And can I ask if, I actually don't know, do you take medication and does your daughter take medication?
Yes.
Both?
We both do. Mm-hmm.
Okay, excellent. Okay. And the reason why I say excellent is because I remember hearing parents say, so I got my diagnosis late in life, age 45. My father got his at age 73. And I remember hearing parents kind of proudly say, my child was diagnosed with ADHD and they tried to medicate my child and I was not going to allow anyone to medicate my child. And I remember before I had my diagnosis thinking, oh, well, that's noble. But now that I have a diagnosis, I'm like, I can't imagine now how much different my life could have been had I had a diagnosis early on, or if I didn't have to struggle the way that I did, maybe through school. So I think there's a difference between medicating a child and making sure that they have the proper medication they need. So can you speak to that parent who maybe doesn't have ADHD, so it's hard for them to understand that a professional is suggesting that they try this?
Absolutely. Yeah. So the stigma is that you're giving it to them to calm them down and make them sit down. I think that that's commonly what I hear. And for me, I don't care if my kid sits down. She can walk around all day. But if she is struggling to focus in school every day, I don't want her to feel like that. And I want her to be able to get the information from school that she needs to in her formative years, because early on, children build off of everything they learn from the beginning of their education. And so for me, it was like, if she's struggling here, that's going to carry on to every single year after that. And that's not going to make her feel good. She's not going to feel good about herself and her performance in school and all of that. And so for me, it was an easy decision to make because of how I didn't want her to feel. I wanted her to feel confident in her education. I wanted her to feel like she could go to school and attend and get the information that she needed. So it wasn't a matter of me trying to make life convenient for the teacher or myself, which is how I think a lot of people think about it. But it was for me to help her have the life that she deserves to have and for her to reach her full potential and have the life that she can have as an adult, and hopefully that's how she feels when she's an adult and looks back. And the right medication too won't make them feel like zombies, and it'll make them feel like the focused version of themselves.
Oh, I love that, the focused version of yourself. Well, Gloria, it has been such a treat to be able to talk to you and to know that there is help out there. There's people who actually do this. You guys can pick up her book. Again, it's Adulting with ADHD. It is Gloria Joy Sherrod, SHERROD.com. That link will be in our show notes where you can connect there. Is there any place else that you recommend people reaching out to you if they're interested in looking into your services, checking out your documentary, et cetera?
For sure. You can also follow me on Instagram at @xadultingwithadhdx. And my website link is also on the Instagram, and there's a lot of great content on there as well.
Well, you are wonderful. No wonder I enjoy speaking to you. I love meeting people who are super creative, but then also found a way to help others solve this interesting dilemma that many of us have with our brains. And I just love the work that you're doing. So thank you so much for being a guest here today.
Thank you so much for having me.
You got it.
If you enjoyed this show, please don't forget to make sure you are subscribed and following along. The Chalene Show is available on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and most every podcast app. If you enjoyed this episode, please be sure to leave a 5-star review and tell us specifically what you enjoyed. We'd love to know. The Chalene Show is released every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. For Tuesdays and Thursdays, be sure to follow and subscribe to Chalene's other podcast, Build Your Tribe, which she co-hosts with her son, Brock Johnson. It's all about business, social media, and marketing, and devoted to helping you make more money and live more life. Links to anything referenced in today's episode, as well as show sponsors and other podcasts, can be found below in our show notes.